Welcome to the Safe Place Therapy podcast channel. My name is Stuart Sheverden, and I am one of the owners and directors of Safe Place Therapy, and I'm a mental health social worker. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land in which we meet today. I'd also like to pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. We record this episode on, and all our episodes, in the Kulin Nation, but also on other beautiful lands across Victoria. So, welcome everyone. Today we're doing a podcast related to family counselling or family therapy. And here today we have myself, Stuart Sheverden, and Jo Aldred, who's a family therapist and counsellor with Safe Place Therapy. Thank you for coming along, Jo.
Thank you.
And so we're going to take some time just to kind of pull apart family therapy, what to expect, but also some common questions that people might have before coming to that space and digging into that kind of work. So I guess to start, Jo, how would you kind of differentiate between, say, an individual coming to counselling and a family coming to counselling? What are some of the differences?
I guess family therapists are interested in relationships between people. Relationships are a big kind of determinant of our happiness. Obviously, when our relationships are going well, we have a better sense of well-being. When there's problems in those kind of relationships with people close to us, often causes quite a lot of distress. So family therapists are looking at interactions between people, and so not particularly with one particular person in the family, but looking at the system as a whole, which is different from individual work.
Because, yeah, I guess then you're dealing a lot with dynamics in relationships, and even as a whole group too. I guess if you've got more than two people, usually there'd be lots of different relationships and different things going on in that mix.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. And so I guess to start with, it might be good to bounce around some common experiences or common problems that people bring to family therapy first, just to kind of set the scene. So what are some more recent examples that have come along to you?
So I work quite a lot with young people. So I often work with families where a young person is trying to differentiate from their family. So they're developing that kind of age-appropriate kind of autonomy. They're wanting to have more choice, making more decisions about the way they live their lives. And sometimes you'll find that a parental system might struggle with that change in a young person, struggle with that kind of relinquishing control over their young person and allowing their young person to become an individual and move away from the family. So families can sometimes need a little bit of support around that stage. Another kind of common presentation is where there's along the line, there's been some kind of attachment rupture. So there's been a rupture in a relationship, which has then caused a lot of kind of pain and resentment for different family members. That's quite a common one as well. Often when people reach out for family therapy, they're kind of at the point of potential cutoff with their family. So they kind of become so distressed that they're kind of feeling that they may not be able to continue their relationship with their family. So, the stakes can be quite high in those kind of situations. And there's a lot of distress and hurt that occurs.
Yes, yeah, you're definitely hinting there at high stakes, but also high tension and a lot of, I guess, questions for lots of different parties even before they come, you know, to the counselling space with their with that other family member or family members. So I guess that's an interesting starting point is, let's say there is one family member who really feels that family therapy is needed and you know, at that point of, you know, I might need to cut them out if they don't come to family therapy or if we don't work this through. I wonder What are the kind of starting points from your side, or I guess the safe place side, to initiate that first contact or start the process of family therapy?
So what I would usually do is invite the person who's initiating the family therapy to come and meet with me first and just hear a bit from their perspective about what their issues and concerns are. I'd explain quite clearly to them that I am a neutral party, so my job is to kind of remain kind of out of the individual sphere and more into how they improve their interactions as a family. So I would kind of take a history. I'd probably do a genogram, which is a kind of map of a family, find out who's in the family, who's close to who doesn't talk to who, where there's been kind of ruptures, cutoffs, alliances. Try and map out the family a little bit. And then I would also seek to see the other members of the family in with their own individual space as well. So I'm not kind of just hearing the story from one person's point of view. I'm seeking to understand from lots of people's point of view. I would also not put a family in a room together until I felt that they were ready, because that I need to know that I can control the emotional intensity in the room and it's going to be a helpful experience. I don't want it to be an awful traumatic experience for people. And sometimes there may be a process of going back and forth between different parties before they actually come together for a conversation. I need to make sure that conversation is going to be safe and productive.
Yeah, so just to kind of explain that again for listeners or people watching this. So party one, so person who wants to do family therapy comes to you first, and there's a discussion and family mapping and understanding of what's going on for that person and their perspective. And then you might have another party who might be a bit hesitant or never done family therapy or real hesitancy about the whole process. You actually meet with them also separately as well, just to kind of, understand what's going on for them, because it's clearly oftentimes it's different, right? Oftentimes they see it different, have a different context, have a different emotional view of things, and maybe that's kind of a really good spot for both parties to feel heard. And for you as well as a therapist to kind of know the sides and know what's going on in the different corners.
Yeah, and for people to be reassured that I'm not taking sides. So obviously the person who's being called to family therapy is going to kind of feel a bit on the back foot, because they're going to know that the person who initiated the therapy has already put their point of view across. So it's my job to kind of join with them and make sure they feel heard as well, so that everybody feels kind of safe going into that session. And it may be different groups of people. It may be the parents, it may be the sibling group together, it might be a dad and daughter. There's all kind of combinations that I might work with prior to getting a family together. And sometimes we don't need to get the whole family together. Sometimes we can identify an issue between two particular members that has occurred and has just basically brought other people into the issue. So once we resolve the issue between those two people, we don't necessarily need to see the family as a whole.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you don't have to bring all the siblings or the whole family. Just thinking of my family, there's about seven of us, so just it's a big family kind of picture. And I think that's another good point, is the real worries about family therapy being quite explosive and toxic. And I'm wondering some of the ground rules you talk about in those individual sessions, individual party sessions, first to lay down the kind of foundation. What are some of those ground rules?
So I would be I'm quite bossy in my sessions. I will kind of control the environment. I won't allow interrupting, talking over. It's not a TV kind of, show where we get a family together. We need to make sure it's a kind of safe environment. So making sure that everybody kind of has time to finish what they're saying. Sometimes I'll do exercises where a conversation between two people, I'll ask the listener to reflect back what they've heard without putting their point of view into the conversation. So a purely kind of reflective listening exercise, and then I'll get them to kind of swap around and the other person to state their kind of opinion. So turn taking, not interrupting, being respectful, if the emotional energy starts rising, maybe taking breaks, being very mindful of how kind of emotional these conversations can be, and very carefully managing that in the room. With that, I also kind of really encourage people not to argue, so not to get into the facts of the situation, more to use I statements and feeling statements, because we're never going to get anywhere arguing about trying to get to one ultimate truth, because there can be two different perspectives on the same situation. So it's more about people owning their own experiences, speaking on behalf of themselves, rather than arguing about who's right and who's wrong and who did what when.
Because I think this is often something I say in couples counseling is if we're literally doing the same thing that you're doing at home, it's not going to work. So we need a different structure, right? We need to go at this from a different angle, based on respect, right? Based on this, and that might even take some time in itself by trying not to react so much in the moment, not just kind of getting your argument ready to fire out, really taking that time to listen and to understand.
Yeah, for sure.
Any other ground rules that come to mind or things that are important for people to know at those early stages of family therapy?
Just that, we're not necessarily going to cover everything in one session, and we don't need to kind of go at a breakneck speed. Sometimes dealing with one thing at a time is enough. We don't want to kind of go back through years worth of things that have happened, and then this happened, then that happened. Staying on one topic at a time, I think, is helpful. And having realistic expectations for the session as well. We're not going to come out with kind of perfect relationships. We need good enough relationships. And sometimes relationships do need boundaries around them as well. Sometimes a young person might not want to be as involved with their family as they were previously. But I usually try and encourage people to veer away from the black and white cut off or all in, to find that sort of healthy balance of how much interaction they want to have with their family.
And going back to that earlier point of people having different perspectives, what if that remains quite different? Like, I'm wondering how you hold that space in terms of, let's say mum, dad have a real view on how their adult child needs to, do more study or, something like that as an example, but the young person is wanting a different future or a different way of living. Like, how do you allow that space to be okay?
I tend to try and teach with parents, I tend to try and teach different ways of interacting with their young person that move away from that kind of advice giving, managing their life kind of role. So, trying to get parents to kind of step back from that kind of role of you should be doing this, you should be doing that, into a more kind of curious, interested kind of stance with their young person. Or, what movies have you seen recently? What do you think about this that's happening in the news at the moment? Rather than that kind of you should be doing this, that, and the other, which often young people really balk at. And we're not going to agree. It's not a mediation process. We kind of always come to an agreement. It's more about hearing each other and respecting each other's points of view.
Yeah. And I guess then hopefully the idea for the young person is for them to feel a bit more solid in who they are in terms of the choices they make, even if their parents disagree, right? Even if they still feel quite solid that, their young child needs to do something different, that the relationship itself needs to change based on, the young person's age, building independence, it's a real struggle for both parties.
And tips to be learned for both on kind of navigating those developmental changes.
Yeah. Okay. So what if one family member doesn't want to come to family therapy? So you might have, a bunch of people coming, but there is actually one person choosing not to attend. Has that happened for you before?
And that does happen sometimes. And obviously, we're never going to kind of force somebody to come who doesn't feel comfortable coming. I think we just remain curious about what that person's kind of position might be and what they might say about things, and kind of try to include their perspective. Ask other family members what they think that person's perspective might be. What would they say if they were here? What do you think? Such and such would do in this situation. So we can kind of, obviously we're making assumptions. We don't know what that person might say, but it helps to kind of keep them involved in the discussions around the family. And I think we have to be respectful about people's choice. Some people might not want to come for whatever reason. In some situations, I might sort of reach out to them by phone to do a bit of a kind of warm chat and just explain about the process, but ultimately, it's their choice.
We can't force anybody. Yeah. So back to kind of some of those things you do see not working for families is kind of some of the communication issues, I suppose. What are some of those layers you see that kind of get in the way of families feeling close or connected?
Sometimes they can just be a different perspective on the same event. And because those things have never been aired, those misunderstandings have never been cleared up. So a person might come away with an assumption about what another person is thinking or feeling. And that has remained intact because they've never talked it through. But when they actually do talk it through in a room, sometimes the other person will say, "That is totally not what I meant, and I had a different understanding of that." And sometimes some repairs can be made with just a simple apology. "I'm really sorry that your perspective of that event was as such. That was not my intention. That's not what I meant, you know?" And I think that's sometimes where, we have limitations in individual therapy because individual therapy is very much about kind of validating the individual's point of view. But unless we kind of actually check in with the other party, some of those misunderstandings can re continue and breed a lot of resentment over the years.
And I guess there's an interesting kind of ending to family therapy sometimes where, as you say, it's not about building a perfect family unit. Sometimes it's actually about setting more boundaries in place to build some level of safety, to build some level of maybe, a bare minimum of respect going forward.
And not everybody has very close relationships with their family, and that's not possible for everybody. So it's about kind of thinking about how you would like things to look with your family and then working towards that together, It may be that big events are too triggering, are too stressful, so you decide you don't want to go home for Christmas. That's okay, if that feels too much for you and it's going to cause a lot of stress, let's try and think around different ways of catching up with family that feel more manageable.
And yeah, there might be a working up to Christmas, right? Or I can't actually do this Christmas because of the past, because of triggers, etc. But how about we catch up for coffee? How about we actually rebuild a little bit of that connection and it feels okay and make some of those baby steps? Yeah.
Exactly. It's never all or nothing, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting one around people feeling like coming up to the holidays now, actually, people feeling that they have to play happy family or that they have to, throw out this image to, I don't know, aunties or uncles or the extended family maybe, that everything's okay when it's not okay. I wonder how does that sit? Has that been raised before by a client?
Oh, yeah, there's so much stress around this time of year about kind
Yeah.
of, especially as well, the questions from, for young people, what are you doing? Have you done this? Have you done that? These kind of tick boxes that young people often feel like they need to go through. And they can often feel like they're kind of not living up to their family's expectations if they haven't done ABC. So, it's about kind of co encouraging families to talk to young people in a different way as well, asking them about their interests rather than being always kind of achievement focused, which is difficult for a lot of people,
Yeah. And even having an individual therapy session on that with clients can be really beneficial. Again, how do they engage with their family? How do they want to engage? But also maybe some of the internal stuff going on, some anxiety or, how do I deal with this person type stuff can. So yeah, I guess we've got the framework of family therapy where there's multiple people in the room, but stepping back from that too, it might be good to have a session with yourself or a counselor around, this is my personal difficulties with my family, and work through that.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. So I'm wondering what other areas you explore. So usually a family comes around, a number of issues that we need to talk through and express perspective and emotions and stuff related to that. But I'm wondering, is there certain other parts of the family that you like to just understand a bit more to help guide the process?
Yeah, I like to understand at least one more generation above that family, because often there's a pattern of kind of relationships that have come from an older generation and then have kind of been repeated. So often families that come to therapy are looking to change that pattern. Often there's intergenerational trauma, so where there's been kind of trauma in a family a few generations back, or struggles around wars, around kind of refugees, around all kinds of experiences that have happened to families that have that are transmitted down through the generations. So they're an important part of the picture of how a family functions.
Anything else that comes to
And it's
mind?
not just about families as well, it's about when I'm mapping a genogram, I also say, and who else is important? So they could be somebody that's really involved in your life that's not officially in your family, but they're a very important person. So it's not just family, it's also if you've got that close neighbor or friend of the family that's always around,
So the who's who of the zoo type thing,
Yeah,
as well as
exactly.
the culture and history and the kind of generational stuff that happens. What about different cultures? Like I'm throwing out there, I suppose, mum and dad or grandparents might have migrated from a certain country that have certain traditions and certain things that they have built these expectations around. And then the young person, again, or family member, we could just say family member, wants to live differently to that. I'm wondering how you, again, help both parties talk that through.
Yeah, that's quite a common kind of problem that comes to family therapy as well. And there's a lot of research around younger generations tend to kind of take on the new culture a lot quicker than the older generations. So there's a kind of disconnect between the level of integration within the new culture, which often causes kind of distress between kind of parents and young people. And again, that's about those negotiations, those talking through things, for young people to understand what are their parents' absolute non-negotiables, what are things that they really can't get their head round. And then what are some things that we can work a little bit on where we can kind of come to the middle a little bit, and just kind of understanding. Often young people don't know where the rules come from, so kind of understanding where the rules come from within the cultural expectations is quite helpful as well sometimes, because if something's just an arbitrary rule, it makes it harder to follow than if there's the understanding behind it.
I'm wondering, is there certain techniques you use around de-escalating maybe some of the tension or some of the anger that might happen in a room?
Yeah, again, it usually goes back to reflective listening, which we use quite a lot, and that's because when you're listening to somebody and you have to reflect back what they're saying, that takes you away from thinking about what you're going to say back. So it takes you away from thinking about your own argument, and it kind of focuses you on their experience. So I use a lot of that, and really kind of giving people plenty of time. So if we're kind of asking a mum about why she's made the rule of you've got to be home at 10 o'clock, really kind of continuing to ask her and let her explain until she's said everything that she wants to say about the topic, before then the other person kind of giving their point of view.
And really, sharing that space, I suppose, in terms of what's happening and
And
So
it's not up to me to say who's right or who's wrong. It's about facilitating that.
So I'm wondering, can you reflect on maybe a few really nice examples that, where you've kind of got to the end of family therapy, things feel calmer, things feel more connected. What can you reflect on some examples of what you've noticed at the end of family therapy?
I think, if things have gone well, people have a different way of communicating, and they've unlocked their horns. I often think of families as two, deers, and they're going together like this, and they need to reverse to unlock those horns. So it's being able to kind of take a step back, and so instead of kind of keeping on fighting, one or both parties usually need to kind of take a step back and reflect. And when that happens, you see, a lot less kind of stress and distress within people, and people just generally kind of feeling much more happy about who they are and what their relationships with their family are like.
I'm also, from our conversation today, maybe another thing that comes out of family therapy is a lot of answers, right? Where you actually give it that space where you haven't before, where the anger is turned down, where that family member or family members just really takes the time to explore what's going on for them about this issue. And then that, hopefully, even just that, right? Again, you still might not agree or come to a common ground. At least there's understanding, at least there's some respect in the room built.
Yeah, because often an incident has occurred and nobody talks about it since, and both parties have got different kind of memories or perspective of what it was about, and they don't feel they don't feel safe to go back to revisit it without a third party to support them. So, yeah, being able to unpack that and really understand what happened and what different people's perspectives were often brings new information to light that people didn't know before.
I often hear in again in couples counseling the real need for that third party, and I just wonder what are some important aspects you as that third party bring to the space.
I think you do have to manage that space actively. Like, you need to be in charge as a family therapist of the process, not of the content, but of the process, and need to be able to kind of say, no, you stop talking now, please. Over to you. So I do need to kind of make that space as safe as possible. So I do need to be quite kind of assertive in that, and also really kind of mindful of different people's emotional experiences. So really watching all the different parties for those kind of non-verbal signs of a physiological arousal that happen when people are stressed.
And is there any times where family therapy is kind of inappropriate? Like it's not going to work, it's just not really safe or advisable to continue
I
or
think
start.
where there's family violence, family therapy can make things worse. And if after a session anybody's going to be at risk, that's not appropriate for family therapy at that time. So usually I'll give families some ideas about what to do after the session, and just to let things settle down and not kind of rehash the session that night. Maybe take some time for self-care and stuff, maybe spend some time apart if they need to. But yeah, in certain situations I just wouldn't go there with family therapy if it didn't feel like it was going to be a safe place.
So, I guess I'm just imagining a listener or a watcher tuning into this session around family therapy. What are some of your pointers, I guess, or initial steps you think that person should think about or do about family therapy?
So I think if you've identified there's a relationship that you would like to work on, reach out. You can book an appointment. The first appointment would be around just sitting down with me and kind of talking through what your kind of concerns are. And then we would map what it might look like going forward. What about if I how would it sound if I had a chat with dad next? And then what the process is going to be. So that'll be different for each family, but I would give them some kind of plan of how I planned to step them through the process. And it might be good to kind of prior to that meeting with me, think about what would you like to get out of it? What would you like to be different? Is there particular things that you feel like you would like to talk about? Have a little think yourself before the first session about what would be a realistic kind of outcome if family therapy was to be successful.
That's great. And sitting in with that person in that first session, I guess the individual then can choose to continue individual therapy. They might actually at that point go, "Ooh, maybe it's best to leave that for now. I need to explore and kind of sit with what's going on for me, with this scenario, with this issue, and then maybe down the track do some family therapy."
And often people are continuing with their own individual therapy concurrently and using their individual therapy as a space to kind of debrief and, have that real kind of support, individual support for their perspective on things. So it will feel different. An intake for a family therapy session will feel different from an individual counselling session because I'll be asking about all different parties and looking at that system and those kind of relationships rather than the going into depth about the history of the individual person.
And something that I'm taking away from this discussion is the real handholding that you do with each family member, and just taking the time. We don't have to jump in the deep end. We can really set the scene for people expressing themselves and building that safety for them to explore, some tricky topics.
It's really scaffolding the conversation. It's really preparing, and getting people to kind of have their agenda, helping them to define what they would actually like to cover in the session. So there's no nasty surprises. It's not going to be an uncontained, free-for-all kind of discussion. It's going to be very structured.
Great, great. Well, thank you, Joe. It's been really interesting pulling apart family therapy and maybe even kind of debunking some of the stigma or the concerns people have in reaching out and setting up family therapy. So thank you for today.
No worries. Thank you.
If you are listening or watching this and would like to watch some more episodes related to communication or emotions, or if you'd like to reach out to our team and book in a time, please visit our website and we have our link in the description section. But please take care and bye for now.